some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's June 21st, 2011. World Beers is our subject tonight. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43. My co-host is Ray Dieter from the DBA Bars. How are you doing, Ray?
I'm good, man. I'm recovering from yesterday's DBA sale. I was out on the Hudson and the East River and the harbor on this beautiful boat. And all our listeners in the New York area are welcome to join us. We go out there pretty much every weekend on this 70-foot ancient, lovely, antique sailboat, and I was out there drinking great beer provided by the Brooklyn Brewers. We had Brooklyn Summer Ale in cans, and it was delicious, and the weather was great, and I would love everybody to join us.
Well, Ray, DBA is one of the treasures of New York beer, and last week at Barcade in Brooklyn, the Good Brew Seal inducted seven new members, including Stag's Head in Manhattan, and Beercraft in Brooklyn, Double Windsor. There are a couple others. Do you remember who they were?
The Waterfront Ale House.
Waterfront Ale House in Manhattan.
Yeah, I didn't memorize them. I actually announced the winners, but I totally forgot.
Well, you go to our supporter, goodbeersteel.com. You can check that out. And also, our sponsor is greatbrewers.com. Learn more about beer education, check your beer IQ, and much more on greatbrewers.com. Well, there's a guest who's calling in, and I have to say he is... what do you want to say? A big name of beer.
He's basically, in my opinion, the father of home brewing, Charlie Papazian.
So Charlie Papazian. So who is Charlie Papazian?
Charlie Papazian wrote a book, A Home Brewer's Guide, a number of years ago, before DBA opened, I guess in 1990, around there. Charlie will tell us when it was. But it basically, it was the compendium of home brewing, and I certainly used it as the home brewer's Bible when I started brewing in like 1990, so it was before then. And it just takes us through the paces, and it's written really well, and it's very clear. You know, it's not like... The science is there, but also the passion and the fun. And that's the thing that he actually impressed me with. It's like he keeps it fun.
Is Charlie on the phone?
Yep, I sure am.
Hi, Charlie. This is Jimmy Carboni and Ray Dieter here at Beer Sessions Radio in New York.
Hi, Jimmy. Hi, Ray.
Hey, Charlie. How you doing, man? It's been a long time.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we just started by asking Ray. I'm teasing him, but I've heard your name so much, and I've been wanting to say for 2 weeks, who is Charlie Papazian? I kind of want to ask you that. Who is Charlie Papazian?
Asking me that?
Yeah, you tell us.
Well, I wasn't quite born with a mug of beer in my hand, but I discovered home brewing back in about, coincidentally, when I turned 21, I was going to school in Virginia and learned how to make homebrew and taught a whole bunch of people, and I'm confused with voices. Yes, so I'm talking to Jimmy right now.
Talking to Jimmy and
Ray. I'm here, Charlie. Hey,
yeah, as Ray mentioned, I wrote that Complete Joy of Home Brewing. The big book came out in 1984, and it's still working hard and inspiring a whole lot of people.
1984.
Great beer.
Wow. I mean that book meant so much to me when I first started home brewing. It was all there. Like I said, it wasn't just science. It was also, you know, like you said, the joy of home brewing, and it was in there. It was great, very inspiring.
Yeah, and I still home brew myself. I find time to do it about 16 or 17 times a year, and that keeps my family in beer and my friends happy.
you know, living in New York City, it's a tough one to homebrew. I had a little apartment when I was doing it when I first started doing it, and it was like I had this little kitchen and I had the carboy in there, and it was really a real act of love to try and brew here in the city. But the results are really, really good.
So, Charlie, I mean, since you wrote that, tell us more about what you do. I mean, I know that you're involved in some groups like the Brewers Association.
Right. President of the Brewers Association, which is the child of what I started back in 1978 called the American Home Brewers Association, the Association of Brewers. And in those days, back in 78, I think there were probably 4 microbrewers, and I didn't even know of them at the time. And homebrewing was still illegal until actually the year after we started the Home Brewers Association. And I'm still with working full-time for the Brewers Association. And, you know, your listeners and you guys may have heard of the Great American Beer Festival. That's probably the highest profile.
Just a little.
And we're a trade association for small and craft American brewers, as well as a educational and a hobby association for home brewers.
Hey, Charlie, is there still a limit on how much a person can brew at home?
Yes, there is. Well, the federal law says 100 gallons a person, and if you're living in a household with two or more adults, then you can do maximum 200 gallons a year. Now, that's a gallon a day and taking the weekends off. So that's plenty of beer.
That's plenty of beer. Yeah, I agree.
That's plenty of beer. So, you know, there is a limit, and each state has their own regulations, and it is legal in all states.
Mm-hmm.
They follow pretty much the federal law, except for Alabama and Mississippi, which, you know, the homebrewers have been trying for years, several years, to try to legalize it there, but have been unsuccessful.
So
unlike Oklahoma and Utah, which recently legalized home brewings, which is a great moment in the history of home brewing.
And of course, I believe it's West Virginia. You have to home brew. Everybody in the state has to brew beer. Isn't that true? I mean, it's kind of like the gun laws, right? You have to carry a gun.
You know, home brewing is a long, old American tradition. You know, George Washington was making beer, and you know, there weren't many breweries in those days. So, you know, he was essentially home brewing. So was Thomas Jefferson. So there's a long tradition of home brewing in this.
So, Charlie, what else do you do? I mean, in your job, are you traveling a lot? You know, are you meeting with people? You know, what do you actually do in your job?
I multitask most of the day when I'm in the office in Boulder, Colorado, which is where I live. Lots of things, dealing with emails. I write for a number of publications. I travel a bunch, going to conferences to attend, going to conferences to give presentations. I visit home brewers in various states. I visit breweries. Visit different countries.
Tell us about a couple of specifics. So let's say we're here in New York. Are there a couple of guys that you hang out with a lot, or you consider are leaders in the homebrew or, you know, the Brewers Association movement?
Well, there's a lot of good brew in the area of New York City. I haven't been to New York in a few years. Just my travels just happened not to take me through. Otherwise, I'd be live in your studio right now, or if I could be.
Did you go to Thailand recently? I heard that you maybe were in Thailand.
Well, I was in Scotland recently. And
not Thailand, Scotland.
What are those lands?
Yeah, I was at a conference there and the European Brewing Convention. And a month or two ago, I did a road trip to Utah, visited all the breweries in Salt Lake City and Moab, and drove back through Southern Colorado visiting some of our members in Southern Colorado. I'm due to go to
Who are some of the guys in Southern Colorado that you, some of our listeners might know? Some of the personalities or breweries?
Well, I've been through Durango several times in the past few years, so I just kind of drove through Durango. You might know Scott Brewing, or Durango Brewing, and Harvest Brewing. Great people, great brews. But I've visited some of the lesser-known, smaller breweries, like the Dolores Brewery in Dolores, Colorado, which is tucked away in a small town of about a couple hundred people along the Dolores River, a recreational area that people go to for hiking and rafting and mountain climbing. Then I stopped in a little town called Alamosa in high farmland country, and did also visit a malting company, some farmers that started a malt company in the Alamosa area. Stars stopped by in Pagosa, Springs and visited the Pagosa Springs Brewery, stopped in Buena Vista, Eddie Lion Brewery, and that was a nice trip. Taking a break from just kind of being in Boulder for a while and anticipating going to.
Sounds like fun. It sounds like a nice tour that someone could organize, all the Colorado breweries. I mean, do those breweries, are they trying to export outside of the state, most of them, or are they mostly just selling in Colorado?
Most of the ones that I just mentioned are almost exclusively in Colorado. The Scott Brewing probably exports a little bit out of the state here and there. They're one of the original can breweries. Of course, if you know Colorado and canned beer, we have Oscar Blues here right in this.
Oh, Oscar Blues is great stuff. We get their stuff out here in New York, and it's really good, really great beer. Hey, Charlie, what do you think about a lot of this extreme beer that's going around, the double IPAs and Imperial this and Imperial that? How do you feel about that style of beer?
Well, you know, there's one thing you learn about beer is that it's a conversation piece, and the reason why it's a conversation piece is that everybody has their own personal taste.
Sure.
Personal likes and preferences and dislikes. Personally, you know, I enjoy a lot of different kinds of beer. If you ask me what kind of homebrews I have, I could rattle them off, and it'd be quite a variety of styles. But
hey, Charlie, what kind of homebrews do you have?
Well, I tend towards beers that are about 5% or less, or a little bit above, something that I can have a few of to have lots of flavor. I'm not looking for international light lager styles of beer.
Uh-huh.
Beers that have characters. I like IPAs. I like stouts. I like German style smoked beers, Czech style lagers.
You're making me thirsty, Charlie.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we should have done. We should have thought about this.
Well, now we're going to spend the rest of our show being inspired by Charlie Papazian, because we've got B.R. Roya from Shelton Brothers, and she was like prescient. She brought along session beers, and Charlie Papazian said session beers.
Mm-hmm.
So the rest of the show, Charlie, we're going to drink session beers. Thank you.
I'm talking about, yeah.
She's pouring a Tara's Bulba right now from Belgium. This is B.R. Roya from Shelton Brothers. Say hi to Charlie.
Hi, Charlie. You actually came out to our homebrew club here in Brooklyn several years ago, the Malted Barley Appreciation Society. And Charlie was kind enough to judge our best of show. And then we had a little dinner with him. And it's always fantastic. Like Ray, I mean, I read the book cover to cover.
Mm-hmm.
Always followed the mantra of relax, don't worry, have a homebrew when things were boiling over and weren't going too well. But yeah, it's fantastic to have you on the show.
Well, thanks. Thanks. You know, you mentioned that I've inspired people, but, you know, with the things that have inspired me, as far as beers are concerned, are my travels to other countries, and I was fortunate to be able to travel in the 80s, particularly to Europe, to Ireland, to England, to Germany, to Czech Republic, and I tasted the beers, the classic beer styles, the way they used to be in 1980, and lots have changed, and those are the kinds of beers that I like to make as a home brewer. I don't prefer the direction a lot of these lagers and stouts have gone as these breweries have gotten bigger and consolidated and merged into really multi-international companies.
Yeah, there's a lot of that
going
on.
They were small and local, more local. They were making some really flavorful beers, and that's what home brewing is about for me. It's like duplicating tastes that I remember, places I've been, that you just can't get, you know, even if it's stuff is exported. It travels a long distance. You know,
yeah.
I would say the best beer is the freshest beer, and that's usually in my home. But when I go travel, I like to try the local beer all the time.
You know, one thing that I would love to do someday is actually taste one of Charlie Papazian's home brews. Wouldn't that be amazing?
I think, you know, I want to keep you on the line. Can you stay on for a little while, Charlie?
Sure.
Okay, we're going to have to take a short break, but when we come back, on Beer Sessions Radio, we have our special friends from Grape Hop Tours, and we're going to talk about doing a tour to Colorado on Beer Sessions Radio.
Baby, baby, it looks like it's gonna hail. You better come inside, let me teach you how to jive and wheel. Oh, you gotta jump and jive and bend your wheel. You gotta jump and jive and bend your wheel. You gotta jump and jive and bend your wheel. You gotta jump and jive and bend your wheel. You gotta jump and jive and bend your wheel.
All right, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're really lucky to have Charlie Papazian from the Brewers Association on the air with us. And Charlie, are you still there?
I'm still here.
All right, we're going to keep it going. So our other guests tonight are from Grape Hops Tours. It's Shannon and Kim, and they've been on our show a couple times. They're actually here to pitch one of their tours. They take people to Italy of many places, and they've got some great Italian beers with them. But let's brainstorm. Let's put together an impromptu Colorado beer tour. So Shannon and Kim, how are you guys?
Great. I'm great.
I'm good too. There you go. I'm good, Charlie. Actually, now that you're, you know, I didn't realize you were going to be here. Otherwise, I should have brought my homebrew. We made an IPA this spring that was, I think, pretty killer. So,
what kind of hops did you use?
We used, you're going to ask me that, Simcoe. Don't ask me because I love Simcoe. But I know there were two others, but I do enjoy the Simcoe hops. So,
you know, I find a lot of women who don't like bitter beers and other IPAs like Simcoe.
I think it's got a little more of a floral characteristic to it, and I think that's why I enjoy it. Floral
exactly.
Fruitiness going on there. But I wanted to touch on something else you said when you were traveling, and that you like to drink the beers that are locally made because they're fresh. And that's one of the things I love about our tours. When we're in Italy, we're drinking the beer there, and it's definitely fresh. It's, you know, we're right off the line. We're with the brewers. And it just tastes different than when we buy it here. And maybe it's because they are drinking it, or maybe because it was brewed just a few weeks earlier. But
Kim, let Charlie know. Tell us the name of your company and the website.
It's Grape Hops Tours, grape as in wine, because we do wine tours, and hops as in beer. And it's grapehops.com.
And what are some of the places that you have tours to?
We do... Well, we do a wine tour, and we to Spain, and we do right now. We have a food tour to Venice, food and wine, and a little beer. But then we also have our beer tour, and we start in Milan and do Piemonte in the northern region of Italy. And Charlie, I don't know when the last time you were over there is, but in the last 10 years, we've had more craft breweries open up in Italy than in Germany or in Belgium. So
yeah, I go there at least once every 2 years, so I'm familiar probably with a lot of the guys in the breweries that you're taking people on. There's some great beers in Italy.
Yeah. So you know about it. But I'm listening to you rattle off your Colorado beers too, and I'm thinking, ooh, Oscar Blues.
Yeah, because if you guys are doing, you know,
we need to talk
Europe,
after the show. I think.
I think that if anything, I feel like I would like to take a tour to Colorado.
Well, you know,
and check out the Charlie Papazian selection.
That'd be it. That would
small
be great.
Breweries.
Could we stop by the Charlie Papazian quote unquote brewery too, though? Like right. Ray said, though, because I think that would be, that's like going to Mecca a little bit there for the home brewer anyway.
Well, I mean, we really are looking for big names of beer, Charlie. I mean, that's, you know, I was teasing you in the beginning and saying, who is Charlie Papazian? But, you know, there's a lot of people writing about beer, a lot of people making beer. And since Michael Jackson died, we haven't really had, as far as I'm concerned, like a face of beer. You know, we've got some top brewers that people know about. I don't know. You think there's any other top names in beer that our listeners should know about and follow a little more?
Well, there'll never be another Michael Jackson. He was really somebody special. And
absolutely.
Friends of beer and people that were in the beer business and beer enthusiasts. But, you know, you got a pretty good personality right there in New York City area. You know, Garrett Oliver with the Brooklyn Brewing Company, he gets around a lot.
A lot.
And pretty devoted to... you know, spreading the word about good beer, good food, good times, and good celebrations. So there's one guy that you guys have obviously checked in with, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so many characters out there that, you know, if you stop in at breweries, wherever you go, you're going to hear some really amazing stories.
That's so true.
Carlisle, Pennsylvania last couple of weeks ago, and I made an effort to see the Trogue Brewery in Harrisburg, and wow, those, you know, just, you know, I've never been to their brewery, I've never been to Harrisburg, and I stopped by, and I've met these guys at beer festivals before, but, you know, just to meet them at the brewery and hear their story and taste their beers fresh off the line and see their new facility, it's just so exciting. This is the golden age of beer in the United States right now.
I agree. So what brewery were we at in Harrisburg? Three Mile Island Brewing or something?
Well, that was in the distance. But Trogue, Troeg.
Oh, okay.
Great, Great little place.
Oh, yeah, I've had their beer. It's great. They're in Harrisburg. I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, they're in Harrisburg. Wow. They're building a new facility in the Hershey, Pennsylvania, the Hershey Park area. You know, first time I've been there since I was a little kid. But it's an impressive place. They're going to have a big area for tourists and guests. Tours of the brewery, but that'll be open late this year or early.
Yeah, Trogs is good.
You know, just there's a story everywhere you go.
Absolutely.
So that's probably you're saying that's the new face of beer, is that there's a lot of faces, a lot of stories, and we're starting to find that too. We had Garrett Oliver on last year. We got some cool people. Even I mean, like Dan Shelton. You know, there's some. They're almost old timers now, but I feel like with BR here, what beer are we drinking right now, BR? Because this is another session beer. Then Dan Shelton keeps reinventing himself.
Yeah, we started with the De La Seine, the Taurus Bulba, which is a really nice, just 4.5% hoppy Belgian ale. You know, easy drinking. This one also from Belgium is it's rather new from the Deranke Brewery from Flanders, and it's their saison, which is again not too strong. They make it, you know, to be more refreshing rather than hit you over the head, something that, you know, more going back to the traditional style of saison, which was meant to be a light, refreshing beer for the workers. And this one's, you know, given the Deranke proclivity for hoppiness, is obviously going to be a little bit more hoppier than some of saisons that people have had before. But again, very easy to drink.
PR, does Deranke have its own brewery right now?
They now do. And that's why this is called the Saison de Dautigny. And Dautigny is the town where their own brewery is located. For a long time, they were brewing at the Deca Brewery, and they were always getting the owners mad because they would use whole hops as opposed to pellets or extract, and they would clog the brewing system. So the brewers would come back on Monday morning.
So it's
and
like
find,
Deca, like deck of cards.
No, Deca, D-E-C-C-A.
Like deck of cards.
Yeah, that's it. Like
I've never heard of the Deca
soon.
Brewery. Where what is
like
the
record
brewery?
Company? Deca Records.
Deca.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, they now do have their own facility and are able to produce more of their own.
And Yvonne's not brewing with Durink anymore, right?
He has. He's been
doing,
yeah, his brewery should come online, we're hoping, September. He's actually going to be the second brewery in Brussels now, after Cantillon. He's opened up. He's got the facility going.
So, Ray, you mean who? Yvonne from Brasserie de la Seine.
Yvonne from De La Seine.
Yes. Brasserie de la Seine, yeah.
Yes.
Well, the Terrace Bulba guy, which, once again, one of my favorite session beers in the world.
It really is.
It's great stuff.
Well, this is cool. Charlie Papazian tells us what to drink, and we're drinking session beers. It's amazing. and Kim and Shannon are pretty neat. They've been on a few times on our show, Charlie, and they've got some interesting tours planned. How often do you guys go to Europe? I mean, how often are your tours, Shannon?
We go twice a year, once in the spring, once in the fall. And that's the best time to go because it's not too hot, not too cold, and there's not too many people out. So that's what we do.
So these are special. So what else do you guys do when you're not doing the tours?
I have like 5 jobs.
we both do, actually. We're little jack of all trades kind of thing going on here, I guess.
So when you go on these tours, how many people are usually on the tour?
We try not to do more than 10 people.
Oh, so it's not like one of these massive buses
driving around.
The Italian countryside.
That's too unwieldy, and it's not. There's too many people, and we want to keep it small, keep it intimate.
Well, that sounds good. 10 is manageable.
Where's your next trip to?
I just got back yesterday from Europe. I was there for 3 months, so I'm not going back until early September to research a new Spain wine tour. Kim?
We've got, currently we have tours scheduled in October, and then again for next spring, we're really looking forward to those. We've got, about 2 months worth of tours planned for next spring, actually, at this point.
And what's in October, the Italy tour?
We've got, you're going to make one beer tour, one Venice tour. We had the Spain tour in September, but I think we're done with that now. So
you said you brought some Italian craft beers.
Yeah, I actually brought... two. The first one that we've got here is called Morgana, and it's not available in the country yet. It's actually on a boat, I believe, on its way here. They've just got a distributor for it, and it's actually a wine distributor, Williams Corner, out of Charlottesville, Virginia. And this is actually a friend of Shannon's when she lived in Venice. Decided he wanted to brew just good drinking beer, and he opened a small facility, and he's been expanding it ever since. And this is his beer, and he makes it from water from the Morgano Spring, natural spring near Treviso, Italy. And this is the beer he's producing, and it's just an easy drinking, you know, refreshing beer. It's not a heavy beer. It's got no chestnut in it. I know we always joke about the Italian beers and their chestnut, but it's just a good drinking beer.
Okay, I've got the bottle in my hand. How strong is this stuff? 5%?
Yeah, roughly, yeah.
Okay, so that's great. That's definitely in session beer territory.
Yeah, this is like one of my things. You know, it's so funny that Charlie said that too, and that BR brought the sessions, because one of my big complaints is we don't have enough session beer coming out of craft breweries in our country. I would like to see more session beers, because honestly, I'd like to be able to sit outside on a sunny afternoon and drink a couple of beers, but if I do a couple of IPAs...
Time to ask that question. What was your favorite beer of the week? Because I know your answer.
It was surprising. It was the Victory Prima Pils, and that Victory is another brewery coming out of Pennsylvania, which has a lot of craft breweries now.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Ray, what was your favorite beer of the weekend?
You know,
was it a session beer?
Well, you know, I was just thinking about this, Jimmy. Maybe we should change the name of the show to Beer Sessions, from Beer Sessions to Session Beer Radio. What do you think?
Well, I don't know. What was your favorite session beer?
The Terrace Bubble that I just had right here on air was so good. And that's the best beer I've had probably.
And Shannon, what was yours from the weekend?
Actually, I was in Paris, so I was drinking Burgundy.
Next.
Sorry.
Charlie, what was your favorite beer from the weekend?
It was a homebrew called Cremasio Ordinary Bitter. It's actually styled after the old Breakspears Ordinary Bitter out of the UK.
Sure, Breakspears. I miss those guys.
You know that brewery, right?
Oh, sure, yeah.
When did it, is it no longer existing?
Well, they closed down. How long ago, Charlie? About 5 years ago, 6 years ago?
Yeah, they sold the property and the brewery was torn down and they started contracting their beer somewhere else. But I think they have rebuilt a brewery somewhere and they are... Again, they have their own brewery, but
right,
yeah, it was a very great, unique beer.
Wasn't the brewer Paul Peter Scolari?
Scully.
Peter Scully was the brewer, and they made great stuff. And the Shelton brothers were the importers of their beer.
So, BR, you knew that brewery as well.
Yeah, Peter now brews. He does the Coniston beers as well as and the Ridgeway beers.
Oh, then I know the style, yeah.
Yeah.
We know the Coniston,
Ridgeway.
One of the things
you asked me earlier, what do I do? There's another book I've more recently written called Microbrewed Adventures, and just talking about Breakspears and such. There's a story about my visit to Breakspears and how good the beer was, and then along with about 40 different travel stories throughout my, 40 years of traveling, of beer travels, there are recipes with every experience. So there's a great recipe in that book for Breakspears, Ordinary Bitter, which I think comes damn close to.
And the beer that you had this weekend, that was your beer, right? The one that
that was my beer, yeah.
What was your best beer, BR?
I don't know if it's my best beer. It was probably the most interesting. I was up at Mondial de la Bière in Montreal last week.
Oh, right.
And I came back with a beer from the Ile de la Madeleine, the Madeleine Islands, which are just in the middle of nowhere. They have to ship everything by boat. And they brewed a... not usually tend to go for the barley wines in the warm weather, but this one was they used smoked malt that they smoked on the same smoker that the fishermen smoked their herring on. So the label actually said in French, may contain pieces of herring in the beer. So I was like, it was very intriguing. It was very, very interesting. You know, the smoke character isn't too strong. It's not like a Rauch beer, for example, from Bamberg.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely the most interesting. The best beer, I don't know. There were a lot of them. It's a little bit hard to remember.
Wow. Sounds like a great festival. So we'll be back in a short break and here on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Thank you.
Service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Every Tuesday at noon, Dave Arnold, the author of CookingIssues.com, will discuss new and innovative techniques, equipment, and ingredients. Call in with your own questions to see if Dave and the crew can solve your cooking issues. Again, that's Tuesdays at noon on the Heritage Radio Network.
All right. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're so lucky we got Charlie Papazian from the Brewers Association on the air with us. And thanks for hanging with us, Charlie.
Okay.
We got a question from an email question from one of our listeners, D. Land in New York City. And this is open to the whole panel and Charlie. It says, is there a good example of American Pilsner beer on the market?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I this is Ray, and I'm just going to say that the Victory Prima Pils is one of the great American Pilsners right now.
Yeah, it was fabulous. It was wonderful. I'm not a big Pilsner drinker. I loved it, and I think it's just I've been drinking the wrong Pilsners.
Also, in Pennsylvania, the Stouts Pils is very, very good, too. What do you think, Charlie?
I have had Prima Pils. I've had Yellow Pils from Oscar Blues. I really
very
like
good.
Locally, the Polestar from Left Hand Brewing Company. That's a great Pilsner. Full Sail, I forget the name of it, but it has a number on the end of it. Full Sail out of Portland, or not Portland, but in Oregon.
Full Sail, yeah.
Full
Sail, they have some great, they have a great session beer, too, called Session Lager. But there's, you're finding more and more people making Pilsner, and even some brew pubs. The reason why you don't see a lot of Pilsners and lagers is because it takes up real estate, because the beer needs to age about two to four times as longer than an ale. And during that time, you can make two or three times the beer with ale. So it is an investment in space.
Absolutely,
Like if you're in the restaurant business, space is premium. And a lot of these brew pubs, when they do a lager and they do it right, it's something very special.
I did a Pilsner tasting at DBA a few weeks ago, and we had this Pilsner that the Shelton brothers bring in, the stuff from New Zealand.
The Tuatara.
Tuatara Pils. Oh, my God. That was one of the favorites of the night.
It's very interesting because it's almost a sense of like wine, a sense of terroir, because both the malt and the hops, while it's a traditional, they use the Bohemian yeast, the Czech yeast, but they use New Zealand grown ingredients. So the Zot hops are grown in New Zealand, and it gives it almost a tropical fruitiness that you wouldn't expect in a lager, but that simply is coming from the ingredients. But it's very unique.
Really good, really.
But
good.
I've definitely got it. Yeah, Victory Prima Pils. I think if I had to choose a beer that reminds me of sitting in Bavaria drinking a good solid pils, would be Victory. And Bill Kovaleski is actually going to be at Blind Tiger tomorrow on Wednesday, with all his beers.
Bill's a great guy. Oh, you know what? I'm thinking of Mars. Mars, their unfiltered Pilsner.
The Ungespundet, yes.
Yeah, what a great
Mars from Bamberg, Germany.
Have you had that, Charlie?
I probably have, but it's between
but
a lot
drunk.
Of other beers. So I got to look between the pieces of bread and the sandwich. There's a
Charlie,
lot of beers.
Do you think that, at the end of the day, do you think that people would really want to have just really good Pilsners from American craft breweries, and that would really be the future?
Yeah, I mean, the stuff they send over from most of the stuff they send over from Europe is, it's a long ways. It's not fresh. I mean, fresh, locally made Pilsners. I mean, you go to Europe and you can find some good Pilsners and such, and they're alive and they're fresh. By the time they get here, some can be good, but most are tired.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think, what most Americans think of as Pilsners, I think they'd be surprised, pleasantly surprised, if they were able to taste really fresh, alive Pilsner with a hop character and a little bit more elevated bitterness than what they get in the international Pilsner.
Yeah,
because, over the years, just like what happened in this country over the years, all those international lagers, they get fewer and fewer ingredients put into them, including the hops and the malt. And they're just lighter, and they're light, refreshing drinks, but they're not the Pilsners of old.
Yeah, even Heineken tasted okay when I was in Amsterdam.
Yeah, well, it's fresh. right in that country. So, yeah, there is a difference.
Yeah, it's great when you have it closer to home where it's brewed. And the same thing here. It's like when you drink at a brew pub, the brew pub beers are always amazing. Freshness counts a lot in beer.
Well, I like
this
beer.
We were talking earlier about the higher alcohol beers and how many you could have. The nice thing about higher alcohol beers, let's say above 6% or higher, that goes really great with food. And you can have a couple with, you know, during a nice dinner, whether it's at home or in a restaurant. And it's surely a, it doesn't hurt your pocketbook as much as
right.
most wines you buy in restaurants. So,
hey, Charlie, what do you think about these barrel-aged beers? These beers are laid down in different, in bourbon barrels and different kinds of
wood. Some I like and some I don't prefer. You know, there's such an incredible variety of barrels that are used and how they're used and the beers that go into them. I mean, the varieties and the tastes and complexities are infinite. I've had beers that were put into used sherry barrels and port barrels and bourbon barrels and rum barrels, and some have been great and some have been a little bit extreme with some of the sour beers. They're not all sour, but some of them are sour. And just everybody has their own threshold for what kind of balance they like in beers. I don't prefer the real acidic sour beers, but I do like beers that have some complexity and fruitiness. But you turn next to the guy who's, and just enjoying another bottle of this stuff or something else, and he's like something really extreme. So, everybody's taste is different. One of the more interesting ones I had was a few years ago in Maui by the Maui Brewing Company. They had their coconut porter, which is an award-winning brew in and of itself, but they put it in a
Kim, have you had it?
Barrel.
Yeah. I do. I love that beer. Actually, we're going to the Big Island in a few weeks, and Kona Brewing is on the destination list for us.
Kona Brewing, yeah. Is that an Anheuser-Busch brewery?
Oh, no, don't tell me that. Is it really? I didn't know that.
I don't know. Anybody know anything about that on the panel? Charlie?
Yeah, it's part of the Craft Beer Works, I think it's called. No, it's called the Craft Brewing Alliance. Widmer and Red Hook and Kona.
Well, okay.
And they are part owned by Anheuser-Busch.
Right.
I'll report back. I'll let you know.
Okay. My guess is like a lot
they
of these
make
things.
Great beers. They make great beers. It's just the ownership structure is, you can't taste that, but, rubs some people the wrong way. But, just for the beer, go for it. I just want to finish that Maui coconut porter aged in a rum barrel was super.
Wow.
So if you go to Maui, see if you can find some of that.
Charlie, do you think that if... are you judging any homebrew competitions, or if there was like a national homebrew competition, would you be involved in that? Or is that outside
of your
job?
Well, the national homebrew competition was just this past week, or last week. It's Monday today, right? Or Tuesday. No, it's Wednesday. What is it? I forget.
It's Tuesday, Charlie.
It's Tuesday, okay. My life has been a little bit upside down.
We know, Charlie, and we really appreciate that you came on. And a bunch of the New York people that we know were at that national homebrew competition. Mary Izett, who writes for Air Street News, and Chris Kuzmi, New York City homebrewers. So we knew about that. But do you have anything to do with that?
Yeah, our American Homebrewers Association organizes that right out of our offices in Boulder with the help of homebrewers throughout the world, actually, and particularly in the United States. That, it's over 6,000 beers are judged in that competition. That's the universe. This universe is the largest beer competition in the history of the universe. So,
hey Charles, is there a lot of homebrewing in Europe and in the other parts of the world? I know in New Zealand there's a lot of homebrewing.
Yeah, New Zealand and the UK, and there's a significant amount in the Scandinavian countries, in Holland. There's beginning to be in some parts of Southeast Asia. There are some. Japan has an active homebrew culture. Australia, New Zealand, they're big on it. Yeah, as you mentioned.
And is your book translated to all those languages?
No, it is
English and English,
Japanese, and I think parts of it are clandestinely translated into Spanish. I know the Argentine and Chile. And Brazil have a good home emerging homebrew culture, particularly Argentina and Chile.
So your book is traded on the black market?
I'm afraid so.
That's so nefarious. That makes
even
better.
When I go down there, they don't meet my name, and they never met me when I visited them. They said, "Oh, I have your book," and I said, "Oh, you do? Yeah, I got it on the internet."
Right,
that's nice.
That must be a great feeling to go to a new place and be recognized for what you've done, which is really fantastic.
Well, yep, it is. It's a good feeling, you know, because people really get turned on to great beer, and, you know, they get turned on to the whole act of celebrating it responsibly, which is, you know, I once said that when people drink homebrew, they don't get, as opposed to, you know, inexpensive, free keg beer, you know, they don't get stupid, they get happy.
Right.
And
what's your advice for everybody?
Oh, relax, don't worry, have a homebrew.
Exactly.
And Charlie, one more thing. So the book that we should pitch on your behalf, which one is it?
Well, everybody seems to have the complete joy of homebrewing. If they're getting started in homebrewing, that would be the one. But if they want to hear, read about my travels and stories and the personalities and recipes that I have come across, microbrewed adventures.
All right. Well, Charlie, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate taking the time, and we know that you've got some things going on right now, and thank you so much, and know that we're behind you, and we really respect you, and thank you so much.
All right. You're welcome.
All right. So,
great being on the show.
Excellent.
Thanks, Charlie.
And now we're going to just give a little shout-out to some events at Good Brew Seal Bars. Ray, what's going on at DBA next week?
Next week? Well, actually, tonight we're having a Yelp meetup, which is great. And then on Thursday we have the Oyster Night with Chop Chop. And on Sunday it's Chop Chop all day with the backyard barbecue from New Orleans style chef Simon Glenn. And then Monday night we have the Liquids of Interest.
Excellent. And BR, any special events you're doing this week?
Well, there's a cider appreciation at Jimmy's number 43 on Thursday.
What a coincidence.
And actually, you know, at 7:30, Steve Wood, the cider maker from Farnham Hill in New Hampshire, he's going to be talking in the back room at Jimmy's number 43. Pretty cool. And we'll give a big shout-out because the Good Beer Seal is gearing up for July Good Beer Month, a month-long celebration of good beer bars in New York City and local breweries. Big event is the Cookout NYC on Governor's Island July 10th and Good Beer at BAM on July 26th, along with Get Real's Belgian beer event July 8th and 9th. So there's a lot going on. Check out goodbrewseal.com to learn more about it. And in closing, I'd like to thank our sponsors, greatbrewers.com. And thanks to Ray, Shannon, Kim, and BR, and especially Charlie Papazian, for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee and Bree O'Connor. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
This is Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer. On the PR Newswire, I read about a new drink that is being brewed up in Utah. It's called Crio Brew, C-R-I-O-B-R-U, and it's turning heads in the coffee world. Crio Brew is a healthy and delicious brewed cocoa drink. It has the essence and health properties of dark chocolate and brews just like coffee. It's made with one ingredient, 100% cocoa beans, which are roasted and milled to produce flavorful cocoa grounds. Because it is roasted and brewed, it has the consistency, roasted flavor, and complexity of a coffee. And yet, because it is made with cacao beans, its primary flavor is chocolate. And just as with coffee, sweetener and creamer can be added to taste, or you can drink it black for a bittersweet and purportedly low-calorie beverage. Just as with coffee, sweetener and creamer can be added to taste, or it can be drunk black for a bittersweet, low-calorie drink. If you want more information about this new revelation on the beverage market, I suggest that you visit their website at www.criobrew.com. That's spelled C-R-I-O-B-R-U.com. This has been Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer.
There's no problem that Dave Arnold can't solve on his show, Cooking Issues. Take a little listen.
So Naveen writes in and says, "Hi, Dave. I'm fascinated by chocolate, especially its transformation from the bitter seeds of the cacao tree to a tasty chocolate bar. That is a very interesting transformation. Are there any other foods that undergo a similar set of steps, fermentation, roasting, grinding? Also, do you know of any other tropical fruit seeds that could become delicious through such a process? Thanks, Naveen." That's an interesting question. I mean, obviously coffee, right? Coffee goes through a similar set of procedures, quite literally, fermentation, drying, roasting, grinding, brewing. And vanilla goes through picking, fermentation, right? It's dipped in, usually in boiling water, and then wilted and then fermented. So it's similar. And then I guess it can be ground to form a paste. But vanilla doesn't taste like vanilla until it goes through its paces to be fermented. In fact, the vanilla that's uncured is called red vanilla. You can get it. It's interesting.
If you like what you hear, you can hear a new show every Tuesday at noon on the Heritage Radio Network, or subscribe to the podcast, or check out the archives on our website. The following is a message from Zingerman's. From June 30th to July 3rd, 2011, come hang out at Camp Bacon, a four-day festival hosted by Zingerman's. The main event is an all-day affair at Zingerman's Roadhouse featuring plenty of bacon, bacon learning, and such luminaries as Alan Benton, John T. Edge, Molly Stevens, and more. The event will be taking place in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Proceeds from this event benefit Southern Foodways Alliance. Also, on Friday, July 1st, there'll be a special benefit performance featuring Andre Williams and the Gold Stars and special guest John Langford and Skull Orchard. Visit www.zingermanscampbacon.com for more information and for tickets. Once again, that's www.zingermanscampbacon.com. Following is a public service announcement from Just Food. Help bring live chickens into food challenge communities through your donations to the Just Food City Chicken Project 2011. The City Chicken Project would not be possible without the volunteer hours, donations large and small, and the vibrant energy and ideas of the communities we work with. Just Food is a nonprofit organization that connects New York City communities and local and urban farmers with the resources and support they need to make fresh, locally grown food accessible to all. To donate, search on Kickstarter.com for Just Food and find their City Chicken Project. For more information on Just Food, visit justfood.org or call 212-645-9880. That's 212-645-9880. Let's keep making New York City a better place to live and eat.